It's been an interesting few months. A lot of folks going home to be with the Lord, being able to do a lot of memorial services and so forth. And it's always an honor to do that. But it makes you realize the frailty of human life. And we look around out here all the time and we see all these tombstones out there. And people that are been put to rest there, we know are not there. They're safely home with the Lord, 99.9% sure. But what would you think if I ask you about your tombstone? You know, they inscribe things on there. Oh, my beloved husband, and all these kind of things. What would you think, or what do you think would be a good thing to put on your tombstone as an epitaph? You know, we look at the date born and the date that we went home to be with the Lord, and then there's a dash in the middle. You ever wonder about the dash about people? What was in that dash? But if they had to put something on your tombstone in four letters or four words, what do you think it might say? You often think about that? Well, I think it would depend on who it was written by or who wrote it, either an enemy or a loved one. If a newspaper critic wrote four little words about somebody and he was a critic while the person was alive and well in this world and the critic wrote something, he was a failure. Now you could say, well, that might be his opinion. But one of the great musicians of the world might be on his little tombstone. He was a genius. Then you're apt to take the remark more seriously if you knew that musician was a great musician. There's a character in the gospel that Jesus described with four little immortal words. It happens to be the Gentile woman. He said, "Great is your faith." She was a Canaanite woman who came from the country north of Palestine. In those days, Israel was called Palestine. The Romans gave that particular name to the area there, known as Israel, Palestine. That's what they called it. So this woman, a Canaanite woman, came north of Palestine, a country that was hostile to the Jews. She was presumably married. We really don't know. And we know that she, at least one child, Scripture talks about her daughter. But that's really all we know about her. We don't know whether she was a good woman or a bad woman. We don't know her name even. All we know is that in this single encounter with Jesus, Jesus spoke to her in a four-word epitaph, "Great is your faith." Only four words, but they're enough to make her immortal. And we can trust these words as being true because the expert on faith spoke them. Who was the expert? Jesus. He was searching for faith all around the places that he walked in ministry, like a gem collector would search for fine jewels. He did not always find it, especially in his disciples. On no occasion that we know of did he ever say of Peter and John, "Oh, great is your faith, guys." No, more often the words he spoke to them was, "Oh, you of little faith." On one other occasion, Jesus did praise a person of faith. And interestingly, it was a Roman soldier that came to him and said, "Sir, I know you're a man of authority, and I'm a man of authority, and my son is ill. Would you, all you got to do is say the word, and he'll be healed." And Jesus said, "Oh, you of great faith." So we regard this Canaanite woman with more than just an academic issue. She awakens us in a feeling of admiration, perhaps as even envy, because she stands where most of us would like to stand. What faithful Christian would not like to have it said about us? Great is your faith. Think of what it would mean if you were an aspiring young artist and Picasso would walk up and look at your painting and put his hand on your shoulder and say, "You have a great talent." How wonderful it would be then to be a believer in God and have Jesus place his hand on your shoulder and say, "You have a remarkable talent for faith." But how does one qualify for this praise? What does one have to do to get the praise, "You of great faith"? I want to look at that question for just a little closer as we look at the story of this Canaanite woman. The first thing I think we can say about the Canaanite woman was she was willing to cross barriers. And we think about what's going on in our society today and even with the kids and so forth. We have a hard time crossing barriers. But her faith was consistent, mainly to the fact that she turned to Jesus for help. It's quite remarkable that she did this because if you remember, she was a Gentile. She was a Canaanite. And they were traditional enemies of the Jews. And they have been for centuries and centuries. It's a real deep and rooted hatred that still exists between the Arabs and the Jews. Then on another note, you might wonder what indeed Jesus was doing in that foreign land. Why did he leave Israel or Palestine and go north? On one occasion, he did venture to Palestine, and this was one of them. But you wonder, why did he do that? Well, the common explanation might be that he was coming to the end of his ministry and he needed some privacy to further train his disciples to carry on his ministry on earth when he went home to be with the Lord. But he couldn't find any place that had enough of privacy to do that. Because as he walked in the Holy Land, everybody was around him. Everybody gathered in. So he didn't have a place to really go and to be quiet. So he decided to wander on up into the area of Palestine. And it's quite unlikely that a Canaanite would even approach this Jewish rabbi. Because most likely when Jesus was walking around, he wore a garb that would indicate that he was a rabbi, a teacher, probably something like the tallit. So for this Canaanite woman even to approach him was kind of strange because they would be, oh, I don't want nothing to do with that guy. Yet here was a woman who had a desperate need. Her daughter was deathly ill, and she was therefore willing to cross over and turn to Jesus for help. That was her faith. Faith still consists of turning to Christ for help in barriers even today that must be crossed. There's a time, 2,000 some odd years ago to be precise, which barring a sudden intervention of a time machine or this wide gulf, Jesus lived then and we live now. We think, oh, well, it's a different ballgame today. He can possibly help me. But there's a barrier in culture. A generation that travels faster and the speed of sound may well wonder, well, how can get help from a Palestinian Jew who traveled on a donkey? Can Jesus even understand our problems? There's a barrier of pride. Am I willing to get beyond myself and admit that I cannot handle every situation that comes up in my life? Are we able to cross those barriers that says, I don't need you, Jesus? I am doing quite well myself, thank you very much. It seems clear that when this lady turned to Jesus for help, she knew very little of him. She first addressed him by saying, Sir! And then, unsure, maybe she didn't address him properly, and she said, Oh, son of David! Undoubtedly, she heard of the great powers of Jesus, and yet she was willing to put down her pride and cry out, Lord, have pity on me. But that was her faith to the extent of her understanding of who Jesus was. And it was enough. There was no great exercise of intellect involved here. She didn't know how the demigods might think or a creed that she might use or how should she properly address this man of God. Her faith simply existed in the fact that she came to Jesus for help in a situation where she had exhausted all of her own resources. And then secondly, we can say of her that she refused to be put off. It's just like in Scripture, that parable of the unjust judge. You know, that woman kept coming to him, drove him crazy, and finally he gave her what she wanted. That's probably what took place here. There were at least three intimidating factors that could have made her give up. First, there was the silence of Jesus. Scripture said that it was silence. He didn't speak to her. The Scriptures tell us that her cry of help and her outstretched hand to Jesus got not a word. How unlike Jesus. We talked about Peter walking on the water and falling down, and then the outstretched hands of Jesus picked him up. So how uncharacteristic was Jesus? There's no reaction harder to bear than silence. Somebody give you a flat no, at least you know where they feel and their presence is, know where you stand, they just say no, that's it. But when there's silence, you don't know what the person is even thinking or if they even acknowledged you. I don't think there's any stronger test of faith than the silence of God. Like Job experienced. You remember Job? Oh, God, where are you, God? Why aren't you helping me? He could have stood all of those enduring sufferings. God could have just stopped all of that in a heartbeat, but he didn't. God was silenced, hiding maybe, or cutting off all communication. We don't know. But again, Job shook his fist at heaven and challenged God to come out. Come out, help me. It's like talking to somebody on a telephone and absolutely suspecting that there is no person there anymore. You were talking to them, and then all of a sudden there's silence. You know they didn't hang up because you could hear some background noise, but there was silence. Nobody was talking. Just silence. That's how I think this Canaanite woman must have felt. She told Jesus that her daughter was sick and needed help, and what she got was silence. Surprisingly, though, this did not intimidate her. She perceived what very few people perceive. She had faith that the silence of God did not mean indifference to God. This woman did not lose heart in the face of silence. And another intimidating factor was that this woman received no help from the disciples. You know, send her away. She's bothering us. Get rid of her. See how she comes shouting after us, Lord? All she wants is something. They said the same thing when a poor crippled beggar cried out for help at the pool of Bethesda. Even when the children tried to see Jesus, you remember? Send them kids away. They're just bothering us. And too often, this has been the church's response to human suffering. Like the church today, had become fatigued under the constant pressure of demands made upon them. But part of this woman's faith, however, was that she would not be put off by the indifference of people. Yet the disciples didn't seem to be the only ones putting this woman off. When Jesus finally did break her silence, he said to her, I've been sent to the house of Israel and to them alone. You often wonder about that statement. Sorry, you're not a religious woman. But even then she refused not to be put off. In spite of what Jesus had said at his feet, she cried out, Sir, help me. And that was the essence of her faith. Now, she may not have belonged to a synagogue or a church of the day. She might not even knew the Torah or what we call the Bible. But she had a need, and that was enough. Going in faith and humility is something that we find very difficult. But brings me to the last point. She realized that she had no claim on Jesus for the request that she was making. And to this woman's plea for help, Jesus makes another statement that we would have difficulty in understanding. And it does not sound like something Jesus would say to her. He said, it's not right to take children's bread and throw it to the dogs. That sounds pretty contentious as an insult. Even today, the term dog is usually for something that is despicable. Oh, you're nothing but a dog. But he was referring to a household pet, not the kind of wild dogs that roamed around in the streets at the time. And some would say that he was not insulting her, but teasing her, that he probably had a smile on his face when he said that. I don't think so. I think he was drawing the lines. His ministry is not to the Gentiles, period. And I think we could certainly understood that, maybe. But at this point, the poor woman burst into tears and simply ran away. No, she didn't cry and she didn't walk away. she answered Jesus by saying, "Yeah, it's true, sir. I admit that I'm a dog. I realize that I have no claim upon you." That was her faith, and that is still the faith today. It is the faith to go to God for help and at the same time admit that we don't have any claim upon Him, having nothing that we have that would deserve mercy. It's no position to make demands. We go to God in faith. But then the woman said something very interesting. "Sir, even the dogs eat the scraps from the master's table." What she was saying, in fact, "Sir, I must admit, I have no claim upon you, but there must be some grace that you have and that I would be deserving of it." Jesus replied, "Woman, what great faith you have. Be it as you wish." You see, from that moment, her daughter was restored in health. The demons were gone. And if you read that whole little part of the scripture, and you come away and you're thinking, wow, wonder why Jesus acted the way that he acted. I think it was the faith that the woman had, the faith to be able to cross barriers, her willingness to cross the barrier of racism. What a challenge that is for us today. Her refusal to be put off and ignored because of her position in life. She was just a dog. She knew she was a dog. She didn't amount to anything. She was just an old Canaanite woman. And the other thing was her humility in admitting that she did not deserve the master's attention at any time. Perhaps it was this woman who proved to be an inspiration to one of the hymn writers in the old Methodist hymnal, the old red one. Not the, you know, do we call this the new Methodist hymnal? Was it 1988, 1986? I forget. This is the new one, 1988. But the old one, the real old one, it was simply entitled the Methodist Hymnal. There was a gentleman in there by the name of William Bradhurst that wrote these words, and it's a very, very great old hymn. I don't even know if any of you know it. I just got the hymnal out and started reading the words. If you ever want to read it in the old hymnal, it's on page 142. And the title of his hymn was this: "Oh, for a faith that will not shrink, though pressed by many foe." This is the verse, the first verse. It says, "Oh, for a faith that will not shrink, though pressed by many a foe, that will not tremble on the brink of any earthly woe, that will not murmur nor complain beneath the chastening rod, but in the hour of grief or pain will lean upon its God."